Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. Beets are a nutritional gold mine, full of antioxidants and nutrients, but they're a mess to prepare. So just mix Super Beets with 4 ounces of water and boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure. Get the Dr. Hoffman special offer at intelligentbeets.com. That's intelligentbeets.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. That's a session where we answer your questions. You send us questions via radio program at AOL.com. That's our email address for questions. We reserve the right to not answer every single question. We select questions on the basis of relevance. And also, if a question is too involved, involves actually a serious medical consultation, we're going to suggest that you work with a health professional and not just provide us with an opportunity to dish an answer on a podcast. But radio program at AOL.com is your destination for questions, and we got quite a few questions. How are you doing, Layla?
I'm okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good. For our listening audience, once again, I'll introduce Layla. Layla is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. She also is a registered dietitian and has earned an advanced master's degree with a specialization in the field of nutrition. And we work together on a daily basis, solving problems for often challenging patients at the Hoffman Center. So I just want to comment on the election, because this week, you know, regardless of your political persuasion, it was an interesting election. But when it comes to issues that we are concerned about, some disappointing results when it comes to GMO labeling. There were a few GMO labeling initiatives. One was in Colorado. And it was actually defeated by a roughly 2-to-1 margin. And I just don't understand why the health-conscious individuals in Colorado don't see fit to pass some legislation that merely will label products as containing genetically modified organisms. It just doesn't seem right, you know, that companies are not required to divulge what's in the product. You know, because a lot of people are concerned about GMOs. Proposition 105 was defeated by a roughly 2-to-1 margin Tuesday. As of today's podcast, Oregon voters also considered a measure, but it is still too close to call. Mm-hmm. The no vote, however, is leading the yes vote by 2 percentage points, so it doesn't look like that one will carry either.
Wow.
However, in possibly one of the hippest enclaves in the country, the island of Maui, which is a real cool community. It's really off the grid, and that's where kind of a lot of trendy people have vacation homes and try to get away from it all and try to lead a healthy lifestyle. They did pass a measure, but it applies just to the island of Maui. So so I don't know how far that's going to go. It's a foot in the door. At least you know that there is some precedent. And actually, there was, I think, some legislation in Vermont that was passed, but it was limited legislation. It's also being challenged in the courts. You know, there's tremendous interests. The food industry has poured millions and millions of dollars into pushing back against these GMO labeling initiatives.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, really fighting an uphill battle.
We are. And money talks. You know, they have the resources, they have the money to make it happen.
Right.
So. Yeah,
and they know that once something is labeled as having GMOs, people will preferentially go for the healthier food. You know, and
that's true.
You know, and that will
and even pay a higher price for it. You know,
exactly. It's not compelling people to buy GMO-free food. We're not banning food with GMO.
Right.
We're just providing a disclosure so you can vote with your feet. And probably the products that are made with GMOs will be mass-produced. They'll be less expensive, and people can make a choice. You know, maybe they don't. Maybe you know, based on the science, maybe they don't believe GMOs are harmful. I personally believe that there are a lot of questions to be answered about the advisability of consuming GMOs. I don't think we know all the answers, but at least the public should be aware.
Absolutely. Bottom line is we have a right to know what we're feeding ourselves. We
exactly.
have a right to know where the origin of
food. So. It's insane that and yeah. that people would voluntarily vote this down. I mean, I just really lose faith in the American electorate. I don't get it. All right, here's another one. Yeah. Here's another trendy place. Mm-hmm. Berkeley, California.
Mm-hmm.
This is a city long known for its progressive residents. It has become the first city in the United States to adopt a tax on soda.
Ah.
So Berkeley residents overwhelmingly approved the tax in a referendum Tuesday. So it's a self-imposed tax. They want to pay extra for soda. However, across the bay in San Francisco, well, actually, they did have a majority. They had a 55% majority of voters in San Francisco, but the referendum failed because it needed to reach a two-thirds majority threshold. The American Beverage Association and other lobbyists spent more than $2 million in Berkeley. But nonetheless, the Berkeleyites voted in a soda tax. So, you know, obviously this has to be like the trendiest, most progressive city in the country that adopts this, because the vast majority of Americans would not opt for a soda tax. I personally, I don't know. I'm actually not so much a proponent of a soda tax, because I think the problem with a soda tax is it's like those exorbitant cigarette taxes. People who are addicted to cigarettes, they still pay exorbitant prices, and it's actually what I would term a regressive tax, because a very rich person doesn't care if they pay an extra 50 cents for a six-pack of sodas. But a person who's on a fixed income, who's addicted to sugar, it probably isn't going to be a big deterrent. They're still going to go for it. And it's just going to be more money that goes in taxes. And hopefully, you know, when they do these initiatives, they want to earmark the taxes towards the problem that is caused by the incriminated substance. So supposedly the cigarette taxes go to help people who are damaged by smoking, you know, with the medical bills. But no, they do go into the general coffers and they expend the money on all manner of stupidity.
That's true.
So that's why I'm not the biggest fan of that. I mean, we want it. Yeah, we want to discourage people from drinking soda. But I think education and awareness is the way to go, rather than just penalizing people who drink soda. I'm sorry, go ahead.
If there is going to be a tax, I'd rather have there be a tax on soda than on gasoline or on wine.
Right.
Or something like that, you know.
Big taxes on alcohol.
Yeah.
Big taxes.
Yeah.
Does that deter people from drinking? Does that deter people from drinking alcohol? No way. I mean, I got a sense of that because I just went through an airport duty-free shop and I didn't want to buy a lot of booze because I just didn't want to schlep the bottles. But the booze is so much cheaper without the taxes in a duty-free shop.
Yeah.
And then I went to get the self-same bottle of booze in New York City, and it's like 40% more expensive.
That's true. Yeah.
Anyway. But but here's also the other point is, if they want to do something about discouraging the use of soda, they should eliminate all these subsidies for corn producers who turn cheap corn into high fructose corn syrup. And also there's literally billions of dollars of subsidies for sugar producers in the United States. It's nuts.
Yes,
they actually make money just by being. They get subsidized by the government. So why don't we just take away the subsidies? Then the prices would go up. And then that would be a natural way of raising the prices rather than putting it because it's stupid for the government. The government gives away the money to the companies that make soda, high fructose corn syrup, or regular sugar, which is mostly derived from beets in the United States, not so much from cane as it is in Latin America. Mm-hmm. And so on the one hand, it would be stupid. It'd be like taking with one hand and giving with another. They would be taxing the product that they subsidize with the other.
Which makes no sense at all.
Makes no sense. So the whole thing is
irrational. The farm bill still needs more revamping. So.
Yeah. It's all part of the Department of Agriculture, USDA, and it's a whole system of artificial subsidies to make bad food cheap to consume. Why don't we subsidize broccoli? you know, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, instead of all the pornography.
Pornography, right, exactly.
Pornography, yeah.
Right, you coined a term there. Okay, so...
No, actually, I read that somewhere. I can't take credit.
You can't take credit, okay. Don't worry, it's not copyrighted. okay, so let's proceed to questions. What do we got?
This comes from Julie. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. My husband was recently diagnosed with squamous cell carcinoma at the base of the tongue. Mm-hmm. The pathology results show that the HPV, human papilloma virus, is the cause of the cancer.
Right.
He's going to be starting chemo, radiation. Is there anything he can do to help minimize the sores that may possibly develop in his throat and his mouth due to his treatments? What do you think of Manuka honey? And
we
were warned that he may have to rely on a feeding tube if he doesn't get enough fluids and nutrients. If we do go that route, I want to make the food. Any suggestions, recipes
okay.
for the tube
well,
feeding?
First of all, I mean, I think we're being generous in trying to answer this on a podcast because this would be a typical consultation that we would see. But let's try to provide some information. You know, first of all, this is an interesting new phenomenon is that when I was first in medical practice, we would see a lot of patients with mouth cancer. Virtually all of them were smokers.
Yeah.
We're seeing a new phenomenon 30 or 40 years later where a high percentage of non-smokers are developing mouth cancer, cancer of the tongue, cancer of the oropharynx. And the reason is, just for the same reason that women get cervical cancer, it's due to human papillomavirus. And without being too graphic about it, this is sexually transmitted through oral sex. And you can get a virus in your mouth. And, oh my goodness, you know, sex used to be a lot easier when I was going to college, you know, because we didn't know from, I mean, you could get gonorrhea, but we didn't know from AIDS.
Yeah.
We didn't know from human papillomavirus, you know, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, that's also famously how Kirk Douglas is thought to have developed his mouth cancer, although it's impossible to ascertain. The good news is that when you get human papilloma induced mouth cancer, it's usually more treatable and more curable than cigarette smoking induced mouth cancer, which has a very high fatality
rate. So, Dr. Hoffman, doesn't HPV also, because of the uptick in esophageal cancer, is there something to do with
that? There is something to do.
Associated with HPV as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There is something to do with that. And also, rectal cancer in individuals who engage in anal intercourse.
Anal
sex, because that, you know, transmissible that way. So anyway. So I just read a recent article, very interesting, about the use of a supplement that we frequently use to support immunity, Empower, or AHCC, as a treatment for human papillomavirus. However, it might treat the human papillomavirus, but once a cancer has developed, I'm not sure that it can reverse the cancer. It may, you know, be a preventive, so it's a good thing to take to prevent the HPV from developing into a cancer. By the way, a very high percentage of women carry the human papillomavirus. It's perhaps 60%. The majority of women, and unbeknownst to them, and it sometimes may cause an abnormal pap smear, and sometimes it's just a carrier state, and it's just innocuous. It doesn't do anything. What are some of the things? I mean, you can use...
If he develops sores in his mouth from the treatment, I think a swish and swallow of glutamine.
Glutamine, yeah, absolutely.
Mixed in water.
Glutamine is very helpful, actually used even in conventional medicine for reducing the gastrointestinal side effects of chemo. Also, aloe vera, very helpful. Mm-hmm. Again, it can be swallowed. And DGL lozenges can be very helpful.
Oh, DGL lozenges would be wonderful.
And I even sometimes make a special preparation of something called glycyrrhizic acid, which is a really potent extract of licorice. The problem is it can raise the blood pressure, but if you swish it around in your mouth and spit it out, it will have a very soothing effect in the mouth, profound soothing effect, and without the antihypertensive effects. I've actually helped some people with profound mouth sores, aphthous ulcers, terrible mouth pain.
Canker sores.
So, you know, look, there are a lot of things you can do to mitigate the side effects of chemo. You can use antioxidants. You can use botanicals. You have to be careful because depending on the type of chemo you use, you may actually get in the way of the efficacy of the chemo or the radiation, alternatively.
Right.
And I don't even want to go there because I don't know what he's going to get. I'm not going to say use this, don't use that, because you know, to do so would be to potentially interfere with the effectiveness of the conventional treatment. So
I do want to let Julie know, if she wants to make her own recipes for a tube feed, if that is in the future, if it's necessary that he may need a nasogastric tube or or a PEG or a PEG or some
temporarily.
Other
thing.
Temporarily. There's a wonderful website. It's called foodfortubies.org, foodfortubies, which is T-U-B-I-E-S.org, and it links to many other websites that also have recipes and how to do it right and make sure it's all safe and so forth, and to what consistency you should blend it to and how to flush the tubes and so forth. It's wonderful. So it's foodfortubies.org, should you need such a website.
Such a prevalent problem that there's actually a whole set of resources for people undergoing that treatment.
Yeah.
And these are these resources are homemade foods, how to
homemade
make your own
foods for for kids or adults who are on a tube feed for the longer term, but even for people for the shorter term, because tube feed formulas are terrible. They're still full of corn syrup and kind of junky ingredients and all of that kind of stuff. So I think it's a wonderful idea to be able to do it.
And I would urge anyone, even undertaking chemo or radiation, is to consider adjunctive intravenous vitamin C. We actually, I'm just thinking of one patient who came to see us with lung cancer, emaciated. I literally didn't think he was going to make it through the week. I mean, I said, oh, my goodness, what can I do for this poor man?
He could barely talk. He could barely walk.
And, he had just begun his chemo. We began a series of intravenous vitamin C's on it. He comes faithfully. It is now, and I just spoke to his relative, and he came in the spring. It's almost winter. He is doing quite well.
Yeah.
And so I'm very impressed with the adjunctive effects of intravenous vitamin C. I'm not saying that some kind of miraculous cancer cure that, you know, on its own, a standalone thing, that it eradicates cancer, but it is a very good adjunctive treatment for anyone undergoing the rigors of conventional cancer treatment. It can be administered simultaneously with chemo and radiation. We've done podcasts with Dr. Jeannie Drisco, who's a pioneer in this regard. She heads the Department of Integrative Medicine at Kansas University Medical College, a mainstream university hospital, and under a protocol there, she's permitted to give intravenous vitamin C with the full knowledge and approval of the oncology department over there.
Mm-hmm.
So
wonderful.
Yeah, good stuff. I mean, that is helpful. Unfortunately, you know, many oncologists are not attuned to that.
Yeah, well, hopefully one day I'll catch on.
So we have time.
Linus Pauling. Yep. Linus Pauling died of prostate cancer. I think he was age 92 when he succumbed to it.
Right.
But you know, we know that he probably would have succumbed much earlier had he not been taking his high doses of vitamin C. I believe he was taking about 10 grams orally.
You know, but I also think that that's a proper test for the vitamin C therapy that we advocate, because it's oral vitamin C, and that may help a bit, but you get much higher levels when you give intravenous vitamin
C.
So
25 grams to 75.
I think
grams.
He was aware of intravenous vitamin C, but I'm not sure that he applied it to his own situation.
Yeah. But the vitamin C he took probably still helped. So
yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Got time for another question for this segment.
Okay. This comes from Tony. One question about the article on your website on ulcers. I have heard conflicting reports as to whether fish oil aggravates or help ulcers. Which is it? I've not heard of fish oil aggravating ulcers. And
I never heard of fish oil aggravating ulcers, no.
No,
I don't know where you get that. In fact,
I mean, if anything, it's anti-inflammatory.
Sure.
It's a good source of omega-3. I mean, no, I can't imagine that it would.
No, there's no scenario under which I think it could make things worse.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We've got another question from Jake. Oh, Jake says, I remember Dr. Hoffman discussing his cold hands and feet while skiing, and I think you remedied the problem. I'm a 59-year-old male who skis, hikes, bikes, runs most days of the week. I'm slim. I eat a low-carb diet. I'm looking for an answer as to how I might correct the problem of really cold feet, especially during winter skiing, hiking, snowshoeing. Thanks very much. Really enjoy the podcast.
Okay. So I think what really helped me was lots and lots of fish oil. And, you know, I grew up very finicky. I did not eat any fish whatsoever. And it probably had deleterious effects on my brain and on my circulation. And it really literally took years of eating fish and taking fish oil capsules before I lost my extreme sensitivity to cold. And I used to literally have Raynaud's syndrome. My fingers would turn white or bluish and become painful. And, you know, it could even be sort of a moderate degree of cold would cause that to happen. And now I am full of antifreeze. And if you think about what fish oil is, no, literally, I mean, fish oil is antifreeze for fish or for marine mammals. Seals and whales have enormous amounts of omega-3. The thing about omega-3 is you can test this out for yourself. Take a bottle of omega-3 and put it in the freezer. And put it next to a bottle of olive oil or put it next to a bottle of coconut oil. And those will be solids in the freezer. And the fish oil will be like one of those high-grade winter low-viscosity motor oils, you know, that resists cold temperatures and doesn't congeal. And that's one of the reasons why it helps to promote circulation even when your extremities get cold.
Fabulous. Wow. Yeah. I never thought of
it. Yeah. Also, we can talk about things that vasodilate. Some people use arginine, although I'm not convinced that arginine is that terrific.
I think the new one in town is citrulline.
Right. Citrulline is a building block for arginine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we also have a product that's a nitric oxide inducer, Super Beats. And I've tried this for athleticism, but I think one might reasonably believe that it could help with nitric oxide production that helps to dilate blood vessels and maybe, you know, even has a sexual enhancement property. Mm-hmm. But beets contain nitrates, which have vasodilate, open up the blood vessels. And that could be, a plausible way of dealing with that. So those are some things you can use.
Jake can eat some more beets, have some beet juice before you go snowshoeing.
You don't even have to do that. The product is very convenient. It comes as a powder.
Yeah.
It's called Super Beets, and it's a potent extract of beet, and it doesn't have, you know, no muss, no fuss. You don't have to, you know, get red stains all over the place and, you know, use a juicer. You just, it's like a dehydrated beet powder that you can add to water, and I take it before a workout. So that's actually one of our sponsors. You'll find out, you'll get information about Super Beets on our website at drhoffman.com. New sponsor. All right. So this is a good place to break because we split these podcasts into two parts. And when we return, Leila, give us a preview of what we're going to talk about in part two of today's broadcast.
My precious granddaughter is 2. Does she have to get a flu shot?
Wait, Leila, you got a granddaughter?
No, that's the next question.
Wait, that's a surprise, because I didn't think you had a child.
No.
Okay, I thought you were just springing this on me. No, okay, you're just quoting the letter. Okay,
I'm quoting the question, yeah.
Okay, good. All right, because you got me, you know, took me by surprise. Oops. There. Okay.
No.
Just came out of the woodwork there. All right,
yeah.
So, all right, when we return, we'll take on more of your questions. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today it's Q&A with Leila. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.